robust and have that, that you're not separating yourself from the root, from the core of who you are anymore.
Good for you.
That
good for you.
Now, through Gavori, you are now exercising the courage and experiencing that, so that you're looking before where you might have felt impoverished with the pain.
Right. So what you saw was that a moment of contraction leads to a development into an expansive place.
Right. So that you're going now into beauty, where you can be able to embrace just the feeling.
Good. I'll have a newly created smile, a place of beauty. Good for you. I love it. Okay. Let me do one more. Let me see. Kelly, what did you get?
Oh, thank you. Well, the part that still got me was the tower in the back.
Okay.
Oh, man, don't make me hang up. I just kept on thinking about paying no attention to the man behind the tower.
That's interesting.
It came to the teacher thing. I kept on seeing you as a director.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. It's not a prediction. It's just kind of a vision of you.
Well, tell me what was the message? It could be anything. What came to you? What was important in that piece of the image? What piece of information did it tell you about me that you would need or should tell me?
The power, control, and responsibility that you have.
Uh-huh.
As a teacher.
Okay. What is that responsibility? Do you know?
Huh?
Pardon
me?
What's the message in it? What do I need to know from that?
The privilege and the responsibility of it, the gravity of it. Being
good. Privileged. So what you're saying is that is it possible that I'm not as aware as I ought to be, that there is a level or aspect of responsibility and importance to this that I'm not aware of and that I should be paying more attention to? Because you know I pay attention as it is. You know it's important to me already.
Yeah.
But are you saying that there's still something that I'm not seeing?
I don't know. It's a possibility. I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that. All right,
now the interesting thing is, I'll tell you, see, sometimes what you have to do is you have to take a risk. You'll see something, you'll think something, you don't know that it has anything to do with anything, you can't be sure that you're right. You know, and so you're afraid to say what you saw, and so you kind of downplay it. Well, I don't know, maybe, you know, but I'll tell you, there is a part of me that, oh God, how would I describe it, that plays down or refuses to accept the importance to some people of what we do here. I tend sometimes not to believe that what I'm doing is either very useful or, you know, that it has any meaning or effect. Sometimes I think I'm just really wasting my breath and playing around and kind of, you know, living a dilettante's life for lack of any desire to do anything real. You know, those things, I put myself down. And Ruth Ann sometimes has to remind me that actually there's more importance to this than I think, and that some people are more affected by it than I would think. And that there is a great deal of responsibility and a great deal of privilege in what I'm doing. And when she says that, I remember it and I more or less acknowledge it, although with difficulty. I have the same difficulty with that as, say, acknowledging a compliment, which many people have. So your perception with that is actually quite accurate and fairly deep. And I just wanted you to be aware that I resonate to that.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Good. We need to go forward from here because there's still a good deal to cover, but you get the general idea.
I just have to add one other
yes,
thing.
Yes, please.
I put my two cents in.
Yeah.
Also, the Five of Pentacles is about to take a look within yourself and to be able to see what is, the most, the parts of ourselves, the shadow parts of ourselves that we find shameful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to be able to look and to forgive ourselves.
Absolutely. If you're in the, and not everybody feels the need to forgive. There's some people who, or not so much, well, some people don't feel it, even if they need it. Some people are much more aware of that than others. And forgiveness is something that might be much closer to the surface for some people than for others. Although I suppose everybody would need to deal with it at one time or another, but it's a good point.
And moreover, not even forgive, but to really just embrace embrace ourselves and to accept and love ourselves.
That's absolutely true, and it's something that we don't do very much of, I'm afraid.
So that's what you were just...
That's basically it. I was pretty much putting myself down, and there's no need to do that.
Definitely not.
This exercise, for those of you who don't know it, is called the voice in the card. And it is literally a voice. It's a speech that is available to you from the images of the card without knowing anything about the meanings of the cards. This is something that you can do even if you have no formal education in tarot at all. It's a very powerful tool. It's a psychic tool, and it gets stronger the more you use it.
I just want to add one little thing on that. Even if you do know a lot about this deck, it's a really useful tool to work with a new deck, one that you're not familiar with.
Absolutely.
So you can use it for a lot of different things.
When you get used to doing it, there's unexpected technique to it, which we don't have time to go into, but I will make the point here. If you learn to do this particular technique really well, you'll be a strong reader, even if you didn't know anything about the rest of it. Even if you didn't know anything else about tarot, it would make you into a strong reader. If you know this and you use it in conjunction with other things in tarot, it'll make you really powerful. So it's a purely practical, very straightforward, very simple, very unadorned technique that is nevertheless extremely subtle and contains some very, very strong things. I didn't get a chance. We don't have a chance to go through to ask each of you what you came up with, because I would really love to know. Unfortunately, we don't have the time. But try this exercise out as an exercise, as a kind of piece of homework.
And as a technique, would you suggest taking just 5 cards a day?
No. If you wanted to, take the technique of close examination, absolutely. If you start from the beginning of the deck, take any suit, or start with a major arcana, start with the Fool and work your way through it. Do the close examination of the major arcana one card at a time. Do the close examination of the minor arcana 5 cards at a time, the ace through 5, the 6 through 10, and then the 4 court cards. And do exactly what we just said. And since you'll be working by, if you're working with a partner, you can, you know, have your partner test you on it. If you're working by yourself, write down everything that you can remember, every detail. Then go back and look at the card and see what you missed and write those things down too. If you do that, you will remember the deck and gain the benefits of the things that we talked about before. Then you can use the voice in the card by simply cutting the deck to any, you know, cutting the deck, whatever card comes up. Do this exercise with it, with yourself, because you can do this reading for yourself, and also with anybody that you know, either a friend, a relative, or a stranger. Try it as often as you can. The more you do it, the better you'll get at it. And you will be, unless you already have a psychic ability which is well developed, you'll be wrong more often than you're right to begin with. But you will develop it. It gets better and better and stronger and stronger.
You can also use it within the context of a spread that you're doing. You know, if you're doing a reading for somebody, and just especially like if there's a card that you're not that sure about, then try that technique on that card.
Absolutely.
Or one that particularly pops out as being specially important.
Right. Sometimes when you do this, you'll come up with a piece of information that's so dazzlingly interesting and amazing and has absolutely no visible reason for it, so that a person that you're reading for, even if they're familiar with the cards, you'll tell them some amazing piece of information based on this technique, and they'll say, "Where did you see that?" And they won't have any idea.
You can also ask the querent what sticks out, what picture speaks to them.
Absolutely. You can do this a number of different ways, and it's a really good technique. Okay. Now what I want to do is I want to approach the cards from a different angle. I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm sure that some of you know the answer, but I'm going to find out how many of you know it, and if any of you know it. The question is this: how many pentacles are there in the suit of pentacles? And I want you to take your time to answer. I'll take a few seconds and think about it. How many pentacles are there in the suit of pentacles?
Are we including the court cards?
Say that again?
Are we including
yes.
the court cards?
Yes. Court cards are part of the suit. How many pentacles? Okay, it's time to get an answer. Let me see. Shahrazad, how many pentacles are there in the Suit of Pentacles?
One.
Good for you. You knew the answer. Having seen the answer. Now, but how many? Now, I'm going to ask each of you, be honest. Peggy, what did you come up with for an answer?
I was busy adding.
You were busy adding? Okay, good. Marcia, how about you?
I knew it was one because my teacher once told me that.
Good, okay. And Kelly, how about you? Were you aware of that, or were you counting?
I started to count, and then I thought, Kelly, you can't count, but I've forgotten it was one.
Okay. Debbie?
I was counting.
Okay. There's two possible ways to look at this. There's a whole bunch of pentacles, or there's one pentacle. There would be reasons for saying both things. Those of you who believe that there's many pentacles, why do you say that? What would induce you to think that there are lots of pentacles in the Suit of Pentacles?
Well, I knew there was one, but I was looking at the individual numbers, so I get my very logical Taurus mind.
What's the individual numbers that you're talking about?
The numbers of times the pentacles drawn.
The number of times the pentacles actually shows up in individual cards.
Right. I was looking at the numbers of images rather than thinking of the pentacle as a pentacle.
Okay. Let's say, for example, that we took a number like we're talking about cards tonight. Let's say we took the number of the five of pentacles.
Mm-hmm.
Does it say the five pentacles?
No, five of.
That's right. It says the five of pentacles. It's sort of like saying the capital of New York. Or, something along those lines.
It's the power of five.
Exactly, or the power of five, or something like that. We're not talking about five individual things here. We're talking about a quality of pentacles. When we say the five of pentacles, the four of pentacles would also be a quality of pentacles. It's different than the five. The quality of a four is different than the quality of a five. Now, the fact that visually, in order to separate out the individual card of the four of pentacles and the individual card of the five, they actually thematically draw it as four pentacles and five pentacles. It's like sleight of hand. It's like a little visual illusion that takes your attention away from the fact of the matter that each one of these things is a perspective, a place to stand from which to view the pentacle, the only pentacle there is. One thing that happens in tarot that oftentimes makes for disagreements among readers and interpreters and people who think they know something is that there are at least two levels of interpretation, two levels of things you can do with tarot. One level is, doing the level of reading. And we talked about the fact last week about the idea that the pentacle is the stage on which things happen. It's the place for personal drama. And the particular magic of the Suit of Pentacles is the magic of the reading. The miracle of being able to tell somebody the future, sometimes even the past, knowing things about a person that there's no way that a stranger should be able to know. And this is people come to you because their lives are dramatic and their lives are important to them. And they really want to know what's going to happen to them. Or sometimes they want to know what they should do about difficult matters. And the cards will tell you that. And on one level, that's what a reading is about. And all the knowledge and power that you get from learning is on that level. And if that's all you do, that's good. And some people really and honestly believe that that's what tarot is about. That's all they want to know. Self-inquiry, which is the other level of using tarot, or one of the other levels, is something that some people really are not very fond of. They don't do it naturally. They may not see any point to it. Some people do see a point to it. And self-inquiry becomes a major consideration in tarot and possibly has more technique, more knowledge, more wisdom, certainly, by far, than the simpler technique of reading for somebody else about the drama of their lives. So these are two very different things. When you're reading about the drama of people's individual lives, you go with the pictures. You don't really have to know all that much. A little bit of gypsy lore and the suggestiveness of the pictures, and you can pretty much do a reading. That and some common sense. And because of that, you get hung up on the idea that there's 5 pentacles or 10 pentacles or 17 pentacles or 33 pentacles or however many there are. You count what you see because you're sort of playing on that level. If you are going to look at the cards from the perspective of introspection, of a personal self-knowledge and inner growth and magical work and even psychological work, there's only one of anything. And each of the different cards is simply a different perspective, a different place to stand from which you can view the same consideration. You're all familiar by this time with the idea that each of the suits is a world. So the suit of pentacles is a whole world. Do you think worlds are simple enough to be understood by a simple phrase like, oh, pentacles is about money? We already went through that last week. We know that it's not that simple. But let's say for the moment, let's say that I were to ask you to describe America, which is a lot smaller than a world. What you would say about America would probably pretty much be determined by who you were, where you were born in it, and what your experience of America was. If you were a lawyer from Wall Street, or a cook in a Cajun, you know, restaurant in Louisiana, or a farmer in Kansas, or a Native American on a reservation in Arizona, or an actress in Hollywood. Each one of these people has a totally different perspective of what America is about. And if they were asked, they would have to give a different answer. None of them would be wrong, but none of them would be complete. And I don't care how great a scholar you are, you could never do more than give your own personal opinion, your own personal view. I don't care how much you studied, you would never have more than your own viewpoint ultimately to work with. So each person has a different place to stand from which to understand America. There are generalities. There are city people and country people. There are regional differences like north, south, and east, and west, all kinds of things like that. And in general, you can get a sort of an idea, but I think America's too big to describe in one picture. Well, certainly if America's too big to describe, certainly the world of pentacles is too big to describe from one place. So what has happened is that the 10 numbers and the 4 court cards were sort of given to us as 14 separate places to stand from which to view this world. Each one is characteristic. Each one is different. Each one explains a different facet. If you were describing an elephant and you had hold of its tail, you describe the elephant from that perspective. If you were holding its ear, you would say something else. If you were holding its leg, you would say a third thing. And if you were sitting on its back, you would say a fourth thing. And so this is like that. It's like describing an elephant from 10 or 14 different places. And maybe between all of those places, you would have a picture at the end of what the one single pentacle was about. So what I want to do is to take a look at the first 5 positions, the first 5 perspectives from which you can see any suit, and we'll deal with the suit of pentacles because that's what we're working with. You probably know that the numbers, I mean, numbers, of course, are numerology. Numerology is a world all by itself. You also probably know that there's more than one form of numerology, more than one way to interpret numbers. And the specific form of numerology that is appropriate to tarot, the one that explains these particular images, and which is appropriate to understanding tarot as compared to other things, is Kabbalistic. There are 10 sephirot to the Tree of Life, and the Tree of Life dominates tarot in a certain way. I mean, it wasn't always that way, and you don't have to deal with Kabbalah if you don't want to. But if you want to understand this way of looking at the cards, knowing the Tree of Life is like knowing the blueprint or the floor plan of a structure. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of that. Take a look at the ace. Just leave all the cards face down and just look at the ace. And I'll tell you a little bit about what the ace is about. The ace is the number one. And I'm not going to even ask for your opinions in this so much. I'm going to tell you, since we don't have an awful lot of time, I'm going to tell you what I have in mind, and then you can comment on it, add to it, or demur as you wish. The ace, which is usually thought of as being new beginnings, that's like a common phrase to use with the ace. Why do they say that, and what do they mean? What happens is that the ace is the pinhole in the fabric and the curtain that divides the completely unknown quality of divinity, which is supposedly the beginning of everything. That there was a time, there was a moment, supposedly, when God was all alone in the world. There was no world. There was only something divine. I'll use the word God, even though I know a lot of people don't care for that word. Could be goddess, could be, universal force, whatever you want to call it. But whatever it was that came before all of this, at one time, was formless and void, totally beyond description. And then it had an impulse, and the impulse was to exist. Before that impulse, even whatever that divinity is, whatever that first cause or that first energy is, wasn't even in existence, because there was nothing to compare it to. It had the wish, the urge, the will, the intent to come into being. And a tiny little hole was poked in the dark curtain that separates divinity, which is not known, to the divinity which can be known. The world comes into existence through that pinhole. Light shines in. It's brilliant. It's explosive. It's unimaginable. It's totally pure. It's in the undifferentiated. And it's intense. The ace is that pinhole. Through the pinhole of the ace, the number one, unity, being, the one God, whatever you want to call it, through that moment of being one, the entire suit comes pouring like a river. So the ace is an explosive newness. It's not just a change of situation from one thing to another. It's a completely new ballgame, totally unimaginable beforehand. Something that radically changes everything. So when an ace shows up in a reading, you're looking at a major, unexpected, and intensely important and consequential change. Not just a new beginning. For example, let's say that you were a catcher in the game of baseball, and you saw the game of baseball from behind the plate. And there was a pitcher throwing the ball, a little hard pellet of a ball at you at 95 miles an hour, and there's a guy in front of you swinging a bat at it, and you're there with a mask and a big glove and some shin guards, and you're down on your knees pretty much, and you're looking at the game, the whole process of the game, from that perspective. And let's say that the manager decides that he wants to change your position, and instead of being a catcher, he moves you out to left field. Now all of a sudden you're in wide open spaces. You run. Instead of crouch. You see everything standing up and from a distance instead of close up and on your knees. Everything has changed. The entire perspective of the game changes for you. But the game is the same. Nothing really has changed. All you've done is move around in it. You've changed your perspective. So, for example, when you get a new job, a new relationship, a new position of any sort, whether you become sick or well, whether you suddenly come into money, or some other such thing as that, and even if that changes your life quite a bit, it's not the newness of the ace. It's just a shift of position from being a catcher to being in left field. The game is the same, only the position has shifted. So an ace represents something even newer and more powerful than that. Let's say that you have, how many of you all drive?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody here not drive a car? Okay. Have you, and then all of you at one time or another must have experienced what it was like to be driving at, say, 40, 50 miles an hour into a puddle. Anybody ever run into a rain puddle at a high speed?
Sure.
You know what it feels like? That sudden impact of high speed into a totally slowing down kind of thing. I mean, a puddle dissipates the energy of your explosive, approach, and it produces a wave of you know, an explosive wave of moisture just sprays all over the place as you go roaring into the puddle, and the car, of course, comes to a much slower speed, very, very rapidly. There's a great deceleration, and you change state. When the energy, when divine energy comes pouring through the opening of the Ace of Pentacles, it's like that. It hits a dense material, because as you know, Pentacles is the densest of all the materials. Instead of hitting water, it like it hits sand. It's like you were going along at a great speed and you ran into a sand dune. You would sink up to the hubcaps in the sand and you would pitch forward and hit the glass, and your car would come to a rapid stop. The Ace of Pentacles is like that. It's an enormous velocity, the velocity of brand newness, hitting the dense material of the earth. Poof! You hit a cloud of sand, a cloud of dirt, a cloud of earth. And it has the same quality of rapid deceleration and an entry into a series of consequences and results that you would have found totally unexpected. Something you were totally not expecting at all. This is something like what the Ace of Pentacles is. This is the perspective on Pentacles from the position of the Ace. Rapid, intense, explosive change hitting a world of very dense substance. Now let me ask you, let me see, Shahrazad, is this an image of the Ace that you're familiar with?
No, not at all.
Okay. Does it make any sense to you?
It makes total sense. I just never thought of it that way.
Right. Let me see. Peggy, you do some readings. You've been doing this for a while. How does it seem to you, this picture of the Ace in that way?
Yeah, like Shahrazad, I hadn't really thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen it more as the final aspect of creation of material. But you're right, everything slows down.
Very rapidly, and the change is dramatic. I mean, the thing is that you make grooves in the dirt. You make holes, you make waves, you make mountains out of molehills, and molehills out of mountains. You change everything. As the Ace comes plowing into that sand dune, a whole bunch of things change. So the Aces are very dramatic, and they're very consequential, as well as being high energy. So that's the main thing to remember about the position. Looking at the world of Pentacles from the position of the Ace is like that. That's at least one part of it. Let's go to the Two. The Two of Pentacles, many people see the Two from the numerological, the standard numerology of the Two as being either passive or harmonizing in a way. Passive, balanced, sometimes divided, sometimes undecided. Generally, the Two is considered to be feminine. Am I right about that, Marcy?
Also, the duality is a big part and
right.
Vision aspect of it.
Right, duality, etc.
Mediator, and, well, you know, all the things that you are.
Right, so in other words, so what you're looking at is two things. It's like two pentacles. You're looking at a pentacle over here and a pentacle over there, a sword over here and a sword over there, a cup over here and a cup over there. So in other words, you're looking not at the two of anything, you're looking at two things.
So that's where the balance issue comes
right. in. Now, the interesting thing is that from the perspective of Kabbalah, the two is masculine, not feminine. It's on the side of things that is explosively forceful. It's the first place where the full impact of the energy of the Ace becomes visible. And the form of the Two, the nature of the Two, the word that describes the Two is wisdom. All of the insights, all of the epiphanies, all of the tremendous opening of the eyes that the Ace provides comes through the Two. You suddenly see, oh my God, look at that. And the world of the pentacle opens up in front of your eyes, just like that. And the entire set of possibilities of that world become clear to you in a flash, in a moment's glance. You take it all in one giant epiphany of awakening.
So
that's why it's harmonious change.
That's right. Now, the Two of Pentacles is called the Lord of Harmonious Change. And you remember that the nature of Pentacles, the nature of the world of Pentacles, is that it's a drama. Not only is it Earth, but Earth is a stage. It's the place on which all the dramas of things take place, and it's the place where things actually happen. And it's the nature of all earthly things to change. Earth is the most solid of all of the suits. Of all of the, not only, I mean, Pentacles is the most solid of the suits. Earth is the most solid of the elements. And even so, and precisely because it is the most solid, it's the one most susceptible to disappearing and changing and morphing. Everything that is now will sooner or later become something else. Every event will change eventually into its opposite. Every up will become a down. Every black will become a white. Every solid will become a liquid. Every liquid will become a gas. Every gas will become a vacuum. And then again coalesce into dust storms and planets and eventually become Earth again. There's no way to stop the endless cycles of change in the most solid and practical and obvious of objects. Look at yourself in the mirror. From the point of view of your awareness, you're still Scheherazade, or you're still Peggy, or you're still Marcy, you know? But look at what you actually have in front of you. The body that you had when you were 10 is long gone. The body that you have right this moment is in the process of disappearing before your eyes. Everything that's solid will disappear. Everything that's true today will be not true tomorrow in some way or another. Well, certainly, if not true, at least will have changed beyond recognition. It's the nature of the drama to change.
It's the inertia, right?
Well, everything that moves tends to continue to move unless something prevents it. And everything that's still tends to remain still unless something, you know, affects it. Inertia is, from that point of view, unchanging. Inertia tends to maintain its state unless some opposite force is applied to it.
Oh, okay.
But what we're talking about here is that there's a force of change applied to the practical objects of everyday life constantly. The earth moves. I don't know if you're aware of this, but you are never, never in the same place for even the split second. The earth, as far as I know, is rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. And it's moving through space. I can't remember how fast it's moving through space around the sun. And the sun is moving in relationship to the rest of the galaxy. And the galaxy is moving in relationship to other galaxies. And from the point of view of being in any one place, never. Not even possible for a split second. It's not possible to remain where you were. The river that you step into is never the same river for 2 seconds in a row. Nothing remains the same for a second. Things are constantly changing, morphing, moving, progressing around you. And it's
by being thrown off balance, that's how we keep growing, right?
Well, maybe so, maybe no. But the message, the wisdom of the pentacle is to know that all things change and to remain in harmony with those changes. To allow yourself to go with the flow, as they say. To not be thrown off balance by things as they occur. That's the wisdom of the pentacle. And that's what's shown in the Two of Pentacles. There are two pentacles because the position of the two, the perspective of the two is shown as two separate pentacles, but they're contained in a lemniscate. The constant perpetual motion of the lemniscate is what you see there. And the figure in the foreground is you. In constant awareness of and in harmony with the endless changes of those pentacles, in a dance that never falters. The boats in the background are perfectly at home on the uncontrollable billows of the sea. They float and change with the changes of the world. And this is what is required of any physical object. This is the wisdom of this world. And that's what you see from the position of the two. So the advice that you would give somebody if the Two of Pentacles comes up in a reading is to go with the flow. Be easy. don't let the highs make you exalted. Don't make the lows make you miserable. Don't let the changes make you sick. Stay even. Stay content. Maintain your equipoise in every situation. Maintain the balance that you see the Two of Pentacles maintaining. That's the wisdom of the two. So when people come to you with their personal dramas and the Two of Pentacles shows up, it's a very hopeful sign. You will be able to maintain your balance. You will not be thrown off by it. At least that's one possible interpretation. Or at least the advice would be to certainly do that. Now we come to the three. Now the interesting thing about the three is the three is the perfect balance, the perfect foil for the two. The two is explosive. The two is expansive. The two is endless movement. The three tries to and succeeds in containing the movement of the two. The three is associated with understanding. Wisdom cannot be contained, but understanding does its level best to create a framework for the understanding of wisdom. It looks at wisdom from every angle. It explores it from every position. It tries to nail it down. It tries to measure it. It tries to gain access to its inside and its outside, its length and its height and its depth. And it tries to do that all together by long examination, very patient process, is the three. The three requires, in every case, patience and work and intelligence and effort, with the ultimate result of some stability. Think of the Three of Pentacles. Think of the Three of Wands. Now, the Three of Cups is interesting because it shows a dance, but it maintains the dance in a very nicely organized and orchestrated circle that doesn't fall apart. Think of the Three of Swords, where all the swords come to rest in the heart. In each case, the three is meant to contain the energy of the two, to contain it and to explain it. The three is, oddly enough, there is both active and stable at the same time. It's active in the intention of creating a structure to contain the energy of the two. So when the Three of Pentacles comes up, you're looking at the attempt to make right livelihood, to act in a proper way, to be what in yogic terms is called dharmic, to do the right thing at the right time in the right way with the right people. It's a way of grasping change. It's a way of making change work for you. The people in the picture are shown building a temple. They're shown building a structure that could be both a spiritual structure and a practical one. Long cooperative effort, not done by yourself, done with plans, done with patience, done with persistence, done with materials, and the end result will be a cathedral that will have all kinds of practical uses and will contain the energy of change. So there is in the Three of Pentacles all this quality of long term. Take the long view. Be patient and persistent. Work hard, do your job right, pay attention to details, be careful, and persist. Keep going. You're doing the right thing. And you will be rewarded if you keep going. But if you leave the job in the middle, if you leave your marriage in the middle, if you leave your job in the middle, if you leave your school in the middle, if you leave the military in the middle, whatever you're doing, don't leave it in the middle. Finish it. And do it right. And in the doing, you will have managed to harness the continuous flow of the world. If you do that, you'll be in harmony with the flow. Of course, if it were reversed, you'd have the other end of things to consider. What would happen if you were not able to complete? If you didn't have the patience, if you didn't have the stamina to continue, things would fall apart. Structures would disassemble. Whatever you had built would fall apart. Sometimes that can be a good thing. If a person is too stubborn, two convinced that they're right, and the Three of Pentacles were to come up reversed, it might mean that they would be loosened up. Maybe something would happen to shake their certainty and make them more vulnerable, more open. There are different ways of looking at it. Then we get to the Four. The Four, like the Two, is masculine. It's expansive and energetic. Through the Four, all the good things of the universe pass. The Four is the expansive love of God for the universe. Through the Four, every form of good thing flows. In the case of the Four of Pentacles, oftentimes people regard the Four of Pentacles as a miser, clutching at the little bit of gold that he has, surrounding himself with his wealth, and not letting any of it out of his sight. And the reason that they do that, by and large, at least as far as I understand it, is because the way he's pictured, many people interpret the body language of that as being clutching. Now, let me ask you guys if that is more or less your experience of it, or am I wrong in that?
Well, very much so. He looks like he just wouldn't let go for anything.
Right. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that that's where close examination is very helpful. Because if you look carefully, you'll see that he's not clutching anything. His hands are open, and they are not clutching, but they're simply holding. He's resting his chin on his hand, and it's loose. And what he's actually doing, or what he could be considered doing, is displaying. The pentacle is at the heart. He's got the pentacle in his crown and the pentacle beneath his feet. He is simply overflowing with wealth and abundance. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but the way his hands are placed around the central pentacle forms a lemnis gate also. Take a look at the Four and tell me if you don't see that. That's the intention of the way the hands are placed. It's, again, perpetual energy, a perpetual flow. The wealth is pouring out of him. He's called the Lord of Earthly Power. He is literally the source of physical abundance. Not miserly at all. He's so overwhelmed with wealth. It's pouring out of every pore of his body. Through that card pours all the wealth of the universe. And when that card shows up in a reading, rather than saying that you're looking at a kind of poverty based on stinginess and contraction, on the contrary, you're being given an overwhelming abundance. You're going to be surrounded with, flooded with wealth, above, below, and within.
Okay, that makes sense. I was trying to reconcile what I saw with the concept of Jupiter, which
mm-hmm.
is expansion.
Exactly. Jupiter is connected with the number Four, and Jupiter, of course, is very expansive. And on the Tree of Life, which some of you have had a chance to look at with us before, the Four is connected with... The Four is called Chesed. It's mercy. It's love. And through that position, all of the good things of the universe flow. So when the Four comes up, it's generally speaking a good omen. The Five. The Five is in the position of contraction. Just as the Four is expansion, the five is its balancing contraction. The Two and the Three work that way, and the Four and the Five likewise. The Four is expansion, the Five is intense contraction. The Five is the place of the greatest contraction on the tree. The Five is utterly demanding. Only the absolute purest, most minimal, most absolutely required thing passes through the number Five. Only the least impure, only the least troublesome, only the most agreeable and acceptable things get through the Five. You will not be allowed to take much through the Five. You'll have to struggle with the Five. And that's why all the Fives in tarot show struggle, difficulty, conflict, pain of one kind or another. The Fives are normally unpleasant places to be. And all that's being shown there is that all of the force of the Four is being contained and contracted in the Five. As difficult as the Five is, the Four is the opposite and is a good omen.
Okay,
So the five is a place of hardship. The five is a place of conflict. The five is a place of difficulty. The five is also a place of testing. The main consideration of the five, the essence of the contractiveness of the five, is the test. You will be tested. Whether you pass or fail the test is up to you. Whether you gain from it, whether you pass through it and get to the other side, entirely up to you. But that's what you're going to be facing, something very demanding. So whatever the Five of Pentacles comes up, the chances are that in material terms you will be tested. It will be possible for you to find out exactly how much you can do without. How little can you have and still live and survive and thrive?
Give me four any time.
Huh?
Give me the four back.
Yeah, right, exactly. Nobody wants to be tested that way. But by the way, in the four, you get to be tested to see whether or not you're going to be overinflated by good fortune and lose the balance that you had in the two. In the five, you're going to be tested the opposite way. You're going to be cast into the most difficult positions to see if that's going to throw you for a loss. Will you lose your equanimity because you've lost substance, because you've gotten sick, because you've become poor, because you've lost a relationship or a job, because you've lost an arm or a leg or are about to lose your life? Is that
so? Sort of like Job then.
Just like Job. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, and in either case, blessed be the name of the Lord. Now that's throwing in something from a totally different place, but the implications are the same. The idea here is to stay balanced, regardless of what happens. And the four and the five, in each in their own way, challenge you to accomplish that. We've gotten actually to the end of our time, and we've gotten to the point where the lesson has to come to an end. I was going to actually have you do a reading based on this material, and it's a very interesting reading that we could do. We will do that next week. I will take this same concept of looking at the numbers from as points of view, and we'll do readings from that point of view, and you'll see the practicality of it. So for the moment, we're just about to run out of time. Before we go, does anybody have any comment or question that they want to have answered or whatever before we leave?
Could you repeat what you said about the bell?
About the bell?
Yeah.
Well, the bell is a leper's bell. The bell is a warning that hard times are coming for you. The bell lets you know how difficult this thing is. I mean, you know what a leper is? A leper is somebody you don't want to get anywhere near. And this is what you are, or what's coming for you. This is the experience you're about to experience. And it's also a warning to listen to your own inner voices. There is going to be, in this situation that you find yourself, there will be two things to listen for. One, you'll be aware of how very, very difficult things are going to get. You don't even know yet how difficult they're going to get. As bad as this five is, there's more to come. And if you only listened, you'd be aware of it. And the second thing is that same listening will tell you the answer to the question posed by your own difficulties. Every difficulty you have is a test, is a question being thrown at you, and you need to answer it in the right way to get through it. If you listen, you'll hear it. You'll hear both the trouble and you'll hear its solution. And the bell is to let you know that it's coming.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's one interpretation. There are others. Anybody else? The crutches, by the way, are just to let you know that even in difficulty, you'll have all the help you need to get through it.
I noticed he's running, too.
Yes, absolutely. He's not going slow. Moving along just at a nice clip, even with a bad leg and crutches. No problemo.
So does that mean that the troubles themselves will pass quickly?
Oh, the thing about Pentacles is, remember that the whole issue of Pentacles is change.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are center stage. They're moving fairly quickly. The chances are that it won't last all that long. This particular set of circumstances is not to be considered permanent. It's in motion. Absolutely. Of course, and this is something to be remembered, sometimes the pits is middle ground. It can get a lot worse. So it may be that you're rushing forward to something even worse than you're in now.
Oh, thanks. Great.
It may be that you're rushing forward to some great, you know, new good thing. All that you know is that things are moving along at a good clip. But where, you don't know. And it doesn't matter. Whatever comes, maintain. Stay even. And that's the test of Gevura in the Suit of Pentacles.
It's the number of self-mastery, of change.
Exactly. It's a number of, it's a kind of, it's in that sense, it's certainly a number of self-mastery, because most people think that it's real easy to deal with good fortune. The fact of the matter is that it's not. It's just as hard to deal with good fortune as it is to deal with bad. I mean, look at Elvis Presley. Man was destroyed by his fame. There are plenty of examples of people whose good fortune leads them, you know, to disasters every bit as much as bad fortune does. So anyway, let's wrap it up, and I know that we could wax philosophical about all this to our heart's content, but questions, technical questions, or anything that's unclear?
It was a great class. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Marcy, as always. Kelly, did anything more occur to you in the way of a question?
No.
Okay. Scheherazade?
No.
All clear as dirt, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, in any case, I hope it stands you in good stead. And when you do get a chance to use these cards in a reading, in fact, if you want to, as practice, another kind of practice you can do, take these five cards. Either ask yourself or anybody else that you know. Go find a family member or a friend. Ask them to give you a question. What, you know, something that's important to them, something that concerns them. Do a reading for them using either two or three of these five cards that we worked with tonight, and answer their question using these five cards. Just the Ace through Five of Pentacles, and just either two or three of them.
In other words, at whatever question they have.
Whatever question they have. Do either a two-card or a three-card reading based on these five cards, using just these five cards, and you will be amazed at what you come up with.
All right, I'll do that tomorrow and let you know.
Yeah, I would really like to hear. Okay, so anyway, guys, thank you very much, and we'll talk
again
next
week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, thank you. Bye.